2009 wasn't like a long time ago. It was, you know, I mean, it's, I know it's a while, but it's, I was an adult then, I'm an adult now. It's the same. Let me just watch Where the Wild Things Are real quick. Okay, it was several centuries ago. There is literally nothing in common between now and the year 2009, when Where the Wild Things Are was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
I mean, for one thing, how was this Anomia?
Barely.
Okay. All right. Barely. We'll get to it.
Okay. And I'm Sean Collier. That was someone who's living in pre-fake Egypt and frankly was getting along pretty well until these weird guys showed up and started yelling about how the guy isn't a god. It was disruptive. That's Robin Hitchcock.
I am going to befriend a saber-toothed tiger.
And Camila Adams.
Roar!
10,000 BC is what we talked about. 11 and two thirds. That is fourth from the bottom of our list. 11 out of 100. Only Transformers, The Last Knight, CC and Company, and Norbit, The Absolute Basement, at 6 2/3.
Really scraping the bottom of the barrel here with these movies.
What, two of our bottom five came in the last four episodes.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Tony.
And this isn't going to be that. This is going to, if you could somehow numerically rank apathy, I feel like this one would be way up the list. I'm sure the number is going to be kind of middling, but like in terms of, you know, a sheer shrug, Where the Wild Things Are is way up there.
Yeah, I don't have any strong feelings one way or another about it.
I have so many feelings.
Oh my, okay.
I loved this movie.
Oh.
Like, I am possibly going to give it 5 stars when I log in on Letterboxd,
wow,
which I am very reluctant to do because mm-hmm. Roger Ebert maxed it 4 stars. So I think everybody should max it 4 stars. I was in the exact right place to receive it.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yesterday, as I was telling you before we started recording, I had in the parlance of children's literature, a terrible, horrible, no good, very mm-hmm. bad day mm-hmm. involving dead career reflection and my cat going to the emergency room. She's fine, but it was awful. Just a bad day. And I sat down to watch this movie and I was like, oh, this is, ugh. You know what I mean? I was like, how am I going to do this? One of the only things I know about this movie is that it made people sad. Mm-hmm. And I was transported to another land, which is what I think this movie was aiming to achieve for everyone, and as it seems, falling short for many. And I think the other reason that this movie, I connected with it so much, is that I've been looking after Camila's daughter this week, and she has such a imagination on her. And like, so we've been, you know, playing pretend so much, which I love doing because I love improv. And so like the power of imagination was really on the forefront of my mind. And also just like, you know, what childhood is like.
Yeah. I mean, that totally makes sense. My initial thought when the movie started was, this kid has got some undiagnosed ADHD. I would like someone to help him, please. Or he might be a little bit neurodivergent as well. But it's just like, because Dan tells me, like, when he was like, I'll watch it and I'll make sure I hold your hand when we watch it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, you're going to cry. I did not cry.
I cried a lot.
And then he was like, you know, oh, we're going to sit down and watch it with Kaj. You think it's going to be too scary for her?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't think so. I was like, my biggest thing was like, I don't want her to get any ideas.
We can't build a 50-foot tall wood castle. We're not going to try. This is one of those times we're not even going to.
Exactly.
She and I made a pillow fort this week, which she loves.
She loves a pillow fort, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's cut to the end. Hey, apparently watch Where the Wild Things Are, because the range is either you'll be fixed by this movie like Robin was yesterday.
Oh, God, I'm not fixed.
Two, Camille and I are like, The end.
No, I you know, went and scrolled Letterboxd, as I tend to do, and some people hate this movie. And that seems to be largely rooted in how dare you take this happy memory from my childhood and turn it into something for sad adults.
What was the book story?
Oh, it's like barely a story.
It's like 30 sentences.
Oh, okay.
It's like
Max went to the thing. I think it is 9 sentences.
Okay.
Because I read Roger Ebert's review and that's what he said. He's not great at fact-checking himself, so... but it's very few words, period. And like several pages are only illustration, if I recall correctly. This was not a super important book to me as a kid. How about you guys?
I never read it.
I
remember it being around.
Yeah, like I remember seeing it and was never drawn to it.
I always think of like, I'm pretty sure the bookstore that we went to when I was a kid had the kids section decorated with the creatures.
Yeah, I mean, that was, it was a very, for whatever reason, it made a mark for like a lot of
places. It looms
large.
Like
a big thing. It's just like, yeah, so, and like, even if you've never read it, like you've heard Where the Wild Things Are.
Yes.
You know, and King Max, I guess. You kind of know.
Yes.
But, I don't know.
Well, appropriately then, to tell you both what this movie is about and what this movie feels, here's Robin Hitchcock with a recap.
Hold on.
All right.
Spike.
What this movie feels. A movie that has its own feelings.
Yeah.
It kind of does.
I am not correcting you.
Can't deny that.
I think we might be the first podcast to podcast about this because I tried to find other podcasts that
there
have
is a This Had Oscar Buzz episode about it, but it's so old it's not on their Spotify anymore. I think I might have listened to it like however many years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's a lot of episodes about Buffy's Where the Wild Things Are.
Which is that Oz?
Yeah.
We'll get to it. That is going to come back. I'm serious. Where the Wild Things Are. All right. Tell me when.
Go.
Max is a little boy who is grumpy about his mean older sister and his mom dating Mark Ruffalo. So he puts on his wolf suit, causes a ruckus, and sails away to where the wild things are. His imagination! The wild things are big furry beasts with the voices of James Gandolfini, Catherine O'Hara, Lauren Ambrose, Paul Dano, and Academy Award winners Chris Cooper and Forest Whitaker. The wild things like hooting and hollering with Max, but ultimately have the same insecurities, pain, and personal shortcomings as humans, because our imaginations are not only a doorway, but also a mirror. Max crawls inside the belly of the sisterly wild thing and realizes he wants to go home, so he howls his goodbyes, I'm getting choked up, and sails back to the real world, his mom and a slice of cake.
Very good.
Just thinking about him saying goodbye, I'm like, oh God.
Wait, so I must have not been paying attention. He crawls into KW's belly?
Or her mouth? It's unclear. He crawls inside of her. And there's another animal in there.
The raccoon. What is it? Richard. Richard the raccoon is also in there at that moment.
He's like, hi, Richard. it is one of the very Spike Jonze moments in this movie, right? Like, so much of this movie is just, I think the biggest word to describe it is like melancholy.
Yeah.
But there's just fun little jokes. Like, that was my favorite arm. And he replaces it with a little stick.
I did love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to nitpick a lot, but now I don't feel like I'm allowed.
Oh my gosh, you are so allowed. My feelings are ironclad. You can't take me down.
Oh.
Well.
The main thing is, I think it's interesting that you got so much out of the ending, because I felt like the movie just kind of went, we're going to go home now. Like... I felt like they had the tense moment, which at one point I wrote down, the only logical end of the story is murder. I don't know.
What?
Carol, like, the only way that, what this is building to is Carol killing somebody. I don't know if it's KW or Chris Cooper. Which one was Chris Cooper? Or Max. Like, maybe not Max, but, like, it felt like the narrative flow of this led to, and then Carol got so mad that someone died. And that made Max run away.
So to me, it was like, Carol is there for Max to understand that his own anger is something that he needs to rein in.
Yeah, I got that too.
Right. Like, because I what Mr. Rogers says about, like, kids need to be told that their emotions are normal and manageable.
Yeah.
Kids don't always know that.
Yeah, it felt to me like Carol was representing Max. KW is Max's sister.
Yeah.
And the one Catherine O'Hare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is his mom.
It's confusing because Catherine Keener.
Right. Yeah. Is his mom. Like
all these Catherines. But yeah, I completely agree. And I think that the reason that crawling inside of KW teaches him he wants to go home is A, things at this point, you have concluded this is going to end in murder, right? Things right. are starting to go wrong in yeah. his imagination. But also just like realizing, even when my sister is mean to me, she's my sister. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, and the way that KW like kind of has like one foot in and one foot out of the community, mm-hmm. like really felt very teenage sistery to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they always have, they're in your family, but they are also learning their own independence.
Exactly.
And when you're younger, like I have an older sister, like mm-hmm. it's really hard, right? Because mm-hmm. you want them to stay as close to you, mm-hmm. but that's right. not possible.
Yeah. As an older sister, yes, I completely agree with that. But I also think like his actual sister, she was disappointing to him, and he's feeling that pull that she's having mm. at this point. Like she's pulling away and whatever their relationship was. And I do think they did an excellent job in the beginning setting up show, don't tell, you know, just mm. like the way that we see Max going through things. And then he's got, you know, he starts his little snowball fight and then it doesn't go how he planned. And then he's like wrecks her room. And like we're seeing all these things around her room. And we know that their relationship was solid and tight at some point. They weren't always, you know, right. beefing. And she still is not really necessarily beefing with him. She's just not taking his side like he would like her to.
Yeah. You know, when I was writing my recap, I kept debating whether or not I should call her mean because it's not like her friends are mean to him.
Right.
Yeah.
And even then, like, were they actually mean? Because
no.
I think they just
broke his igloo.
I don't think it was on purpose. They played too rough.
Okay.
Okay. Here's my other thing, which that I am the most childless of anyone in this room. Two of us are childless, but one occasionally cares for a child, or at least.
Has enough in her orbit. Right.
I'm really close with my nibblings and yes. my best friend's kids. And
Nothing. There's one friend's kid that I give a present to sometimes. That's it. So from Max is kind of a shit. Like I know that's sort of the point.
Yeah. Mm.
But the whole pre-imagination portion,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, you started a snowball fight with some people, with some teenagers.
Yeah, you should have known better, Max.
Who instead of being like, F you, kid, play with you for a minute. They right. literally were like, great, let's play with that kid. Mm. And then because they crushed an igloo that they didn't know like was an igloo, right. You're furious at them. You're not just like, oh, man, like you're furious, which you're a child, I get it. Yeah. But then when they're explaining this later, you're like, they're mean and they crushed my igloo and she didn't do anything about it. It's like, you're just kind of being a jerk. You're just kind of being self-centered.
Those are children.
I know. But mom is an enabler because that, I know that like,
oh,
not
God, here we go.
Not everything, not everything is a lesson, but like, it would have been really easy for her to be like, yeah, well, you know, it can be really hard to stand up to friends and your sister's a teenager now and there's all kinds of pressures. And instead, mom was basically just like, that sucks. Like, make some kind of a like.
Sometimes it be like that. We don't always have the emotional bandwidth to turn everything into a teachable moment. We try.
I know. But then the temper tantrum is just Max going like, nothing's wrong. I'm just going to ruin everyone's yeah. time.
Mm.
Nothing has gone wrong for me.
Children. I do think that maybe my interpretation of the beginning is really colored by, I wonder if that's going to be on mic. It's sirens. My interpretation is really colored by having been a younger sibling in a way that I think you both don't remember. Sure, and sure. Also, you know, my own personal shortcomings as a younger sibling, right? Like I remember those feelings of they're all out to get me when they just think of you as a kid and them as themselves as grownups.
Right.
Which big is kids,
so
right?
crazy. Like yeah. everything is, yeah, it's all very skewed. Yep. It's just like the whole experience of, you know, we go from childhood to Chingate. What is happening?
Yeah.
I everything is skewed in that moment, and it just we're all learning how to deal with fucking world and other people and our own emotions, and yeah, like the height of everything is so fucking important, and at that age, like, your emotions are just on the surface all the time, and then it gets worse, and then you hit puberty, and then it's just like,
and what, Max is what, like 8, 9, so he's like
old,
he's
enough
not,
to know better.
He's not pubescent though,
right? I want to say
yeah.
And I will say I appreciated the way that his mom is depicted, where she's not depicted as a bad mother. She's depicted as somebody with her own life, which this kid doesn't understand.
And she's also like struggling. It seems like I don't know what happened to his dad, but you know, she's whatever. She's struggling work wise, trying to make ends meet, I'm assuming, but. I love that she takes the time to write out his, like, listen to his story and then type it out.
That was so touching.
Right? Like, that, to me, that made me like, damn, I suck.
No! No, I spent the week with your daughter.
She's an enabler.
You are an excellent mother because you have an excellent daughter.
Thank you.
You know what? I think I just diagnosed it because I was looking at my notes, and this movie literally begins with Max not treating a dog properly.
Oh god, yeah, that sent me.
So as someone who does care about dogs but does not care about children, I it's a movie that literally is set up to begin with me going, no, I don't like you.
This kid is a fucking
that
dog is actually scared and you're being too rough.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
he was being too rough.
Where the Wild Things Are, October 16th of 2009, 36th number one movie of the year. To answer your question, how was this Anomia? Mm. This is just ground zero of everything was for 1 week. Mm. I mean, we're in October and it's the 36th already.
Oh, okay.
So this was the most diffuse the box office was. It won its opening weekend with $32.6 million, easily defeating Law-Abiding Citizen with Gerard Butler in second. Mm. And the remake of The Stepfather in fifth. They remade this.
Oh, I love that one.
With whom?
Dude from Penn Badgley is the son.
Okay.
And a guy from Nip Tuck, Dylan something.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, I like that version.
Someone who got Amber Heard is there as a very young person. That was fifth. It was a 1 weekend winner. It dropped to third the following weekend, behind the rapidly expanding Paranormal Activity. This is when Paranormal Activity was growing.
First one?
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
Mm. I just got angry at Mika again.
Fair. which jumped from third to first that next weekend, and the debuting Saw 6 was in second, which means Saw 6 is not on our list, which is a shame because it's the best one other than the original.
Yes, I would agree, and yeah. I think that, so Saw 6 was the one coming out, and this was the year, 2009, that Dan and I started dating, and I made him watch all of the other Saws before we went to see them. That one.
That
he was into you.
You know, like, I remember when I made Colin watch Buffy, I was like, this is a test. Mm-hmm. Sorry. You're going to pass or you're going to fail.
Yeah, right.
Them's the rules. It made a total of $77.2 million. That's 44th for the year. So this was a big financial disappointment. The budget was over $100 million.
What?
Yeah. Part of that was, there was an early cut that they were like, this isn't going to work. We have to start from scratch.
Damn.
So they essentially...
Sonic the Hedgehog style.
Yeah. They didn't start from scratch, but they did throw a lot more on the budget later.
I see.
To try to...
How much... Like, I know that there's a ton of puppetry in this. Like, the puppetry portion of the credits... I watched the whole credits because I was weeping.
Oh.
The puppetry portion of the credits... is extensive.
So
like, it's clearly not all CGI.
It's their full costumes with computer generated faces. On day one, they had animatronic, like, labyrinth style.
Wow.
But
much more advanced, like with expressions and stuff.
Yeah.
And that didn't work because the mechanics were so heavy that the actors couldn't walk around.
It would, like, top heavy and would fall down.
Yeah. There's like, I thought I read somewhere that only one of the performers could successfully walk in a straight line wearing the
That's a fun fact.
So they took all that stuff out and
put CGI faces in there. I think the CGI is good.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Which, like, this is an old movie, as you pointed out in the cold open, so that's pretty impressive.
This was in production forever. This went into production in the early 80s.
What?
Initially as a Disney project, with a distant pre-Pixar John Lasseter working on it, that there was a Mr. Lasseter referenced in the film.
I believe he is also in the extensive thank you to all these people who helped us with various drafts and cuts, which is like a murderer's row. It's like hang on, I have to pull it up because it's deranged.
Well, John Lasseter made, again, in the early 80s, a thing that would have had drawn characters on computer generated backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So you would have had like pre-Tron computer backgrounds.
Oh, whoa.
With cartoon characters dancing around them.
Huh.
And they kind of did a proof of concept, and everyone saw that and went, no, this isn't going to.
People on this list include Miranda July, Steven Soderbergh, Brad Pitt, Bennett Miller, Mike Mills, The Arcade Fire, Sean Penn, Mick Sweeney's, Benicio Del Toro, Tom Noonan, Michelle Williams, Girl Skateboard Family, David Fincher, David O. Russell, Nicole Hall of Center. Yeah. And more.
A lot of very cool people had to talk about this movie for a long time. Development continued late 90s. It was supposed to have Gore Verbinski directing.
Who's that again?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
No. They kept going through directors, and they landed on Spike Jonze, who Maurice Sendak really liked. That was, you know, where he thought it was going to work.
Wouldn't he? I mean, this is Spike Jonze's third movie.
Of four. He's only made four movies.
Oh, Jesus.
He's only made this, Being John Malkovich, adaptation, and Her.
To me,
the only Spike Jonze movies.
The Kenzo World ad is his movie of its own. have you seen that, Sean, with Margaret Qualley dancing?
I think so.
I probably sent it to you before because I'm obsessed with it.
I think I watched it before I was going to interview her because I had to
things to talk about.
No, I wanted to understand her a little bit more.
I think that is why I like her. Like, that's all I need for the rest of her life. But like what I was going to say is that his first two movies were basically universally acclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, both excellent films. So why wouldn't Maurice Sendak trust him? Yeah. And I assume that he was like, hey, guess what, buddy? I'm going to make a really melancholy movie out of your joyful children's book.
Mm-hmm.
And which was written, 40 years before this?
It was released in 1963.
Wow.
And won the Caldecott Medal. It has sold at least 19 million copies, has been voted the best picture book of all time in various surveys. Sendak lived until 2012. He said of the movie, I've never seen a movie that looked or felt like this.
Agreed.
And he said Jonze was a real artist, and he lets it come through in the work.
I agree.
Yes, this is definitely an artist's telling of that story.
It's undeniably gorgeous. I mean, that's when it wasn't working for me, what I kept going back to was, this is so beautiful to look at. Mm-hmm. And I am getting these feelings just by kind of observing it and letting the world that's been created affect me.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the trailer?
Sure.
Regarding editing in the trailer, I can't super do that because it has one line of dialogue and then it's an Arcade Fire song and Spotify will get mad at us.
Yeah,
so listen to the 10 seconds of it that I put in there and then go listen to the entire album Funeral and then come back to this.
I didn't want to wake you up, but I really want to show you something.
Even though I have not seen this movie, the 16 years since it came out, I clearly remember the first time I saw that trailer. And like, Arcade Fire, I'm an elder millennial white lady. Like, they have the strongest of chokeholds on me. But like, that trailer, I just was like, oh my God.
Wasn't there some trouble?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, 100%.
But like, that tone still like pours a certain chemical onto a certain slice of brain.
I mean, that album came out the year before my parents died, so like it really got me through that grief year. Like, I just, woof. So, and I also, Well, okay, finished with facts, but remind me to talk more about the music.
Oh, I'm almost done. Production process was a battle, as you can imagine. The studio was fighting with Jones on the tone. They wanted it to be a family movie. Eventually, they kind of threw their hands up and started marketing it at college-aged adults rather than children. They weren't going to win the battle, so they said, fine, we're going to start targeting it differently.
Which, like, credit to Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, they didn't want to do that. They fought it the whole way, but then when the time came, they kind of...
And credit to Spike Jonze, I assume, for being relentless in that fight.
Yeah. Your co-writer, hipster darling Dave Eggers, who later turned it into a novel. So there's a novel from a few years later of this version of this story. He's worked on more screenplays than I realized. He's the writer or co-writer on Away We Go, The Circle, which is based on his book, Promised Land, which was the real curveball. He's done some stuff.
I like him. Or at least like his, I wasn't aware of his screenwriting, but like some of his novels. Some
what
of his
has
books
he written? Sorry.
Heartbreaking work of staggering genius.
Talking about my grief year. Yeah. You know how many people were like, you got to read this book.
Yeah.
And one of my friend's sisters gave me her copy. And of course I read it and it was very deeply moving. You know, I was reading it while I was taking care of my little brother. And yeah, so holy cow. All right. That guy also apparently has a chokehold on me.
I have to be the only age where occasionally that was assigned to you in college.
That must be.
Like I read it for a class. Oh, and wow. And the teacher was kind of she was obsessed with the concept of postmodernism. Uh-huh. And all of, you know, the media label on that is, oh, it's the great postmodern memoir, which he hated. And in most editions of that book have like 60 pages of him writing about what happened after the book came out. And in there, he's like, this isn't postmodern. It's not, you're not postmodern just because you wrote weird things on the copyright info page. And someone pointed that out to the teacher and she was like, right, he's being post-postmodern. Anyway, let's move on.
Had his sister died by that point?
I don't think so.
Okay. His sister died by suicide, which is difficult for me. and for him, obviously.
I like him. I'm, you know, I haven't, like, stayed with him, but everything I've ever, you know.
Exactly.
You know. Do I have any other facts? Expensive baubles, not quite, kind of.
Right, there's a This Had Oscar buzz about this.
Four Critics' Choice nominations for Young Performer, Costume Design, Score, and Song. A Golden Globe nomination for The Score by Karen O of the AAS.
I loved the music in this movie.
I just loved that it was something different.
Yeah, I tend to find, I can't think of other examples, so help me out if you can, but like when the score and the original songs are so interwoven like that, it just always works for me.
New Suspiria.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was in the National Board of Review top 10 for that year, but it did not. Critics' Choice and one Globe nomination are the closest things it got to, you know, mainstream nominations. And that's kind of surprising, honestly.
I would have nominated The Score. I would have nominated the production design, and I would have nominated the visual effects.
Despite not being blown away by this, I kind of would have nominated adapted screenplay.
Oh, yes.
Because boy, did you have to adapt that screenplay.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have nominated for Best Picture. I'm talking about giving it 5 stars, but I realize that I'm an outlier there.
Those are all the facts.
And then the other thing I would say is I loved James Gandolfini in this movie.
It was really, like, I loved him in it. I loved imagining him reading these lines and doing all of that bit, but it was also just like, I'm hearing Tony Soprano. Like, so I was like really...
Well, like, Sean sent that video. Right? Yeah. I don't know if it will translate into audio, but if it does, I'll put in a clip.
Looks like we found our king.
Understand. He doesn't look like a king.
Back off and respect the title, you fucking jerk off.
But it was just like crazy to me. I think that's one of the reasons why I wasn't able to get emotional about it. Because like I'm just like, this is Tony Soprano. And I'm like going off into like thinking about like what that video was saying. Like when he said, this is our king, I was like, this is insane.
I was so transported. He didn't sound like Tony Soprano to me. And I just came to care so much about this erratic monster that I'm just so impressed with his work here. And I got really sad again about him not being with us anymore.
Right, yeah, and then there was that. Like, I was definitely like, oh, man, yeah, that's right, you know?
Ugh. He had so much more to give!
I know.
What's... Did he do an... Did he do a Nicole Holofcener movie late?
There was that one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Was that Nicole Holofcener?
What the hell's the name of it?
Enough Said? Am I making that up?
That sounds right.
It's either her or a director like her, which is a terrible thing to say. No, I'm not a jerk. It is her.
That is Enough Said. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I mean, to be fair, I confuse her and Miranda July and sure. Lisa Cholodenko sure. a lot.
I feel like this movie, because I remember seeing this movie in the theater, this like started advancing my picture of him beyond Tony Soprano and Enough Said like solidified.
I never saw it. I should.
He's just so gentle and nice and calm that like you're like, no, he can do a lot more.
But I think by time I would have gotten around to it, he had died and I was like, I can't get sad about him being dead.
Right. Well, I had seen him in like some other things too that it displayed this gentleness. I want to say The Mexican was one where he was supposed to be like this typical hitman or something,
right.
But he ends up being gay and like letting out his emotions and just like being real vulnerable.
Well, talk about a movie that I have completely erased from my brain. I think I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly a, oh yeah, let's watch this.
Right.
And nobody else seems, it's not playing on TNT all the time, right. Or anything either. Like everybody else seems to have erased it too.
Why did this whole era hate bright colors?
I don't know. But, and we'll talk and you can't handle the truth about the lack of bright colors. For me, I thought it fit the tone of the film.
It did. Yeah. It just, it's also very, because I'm thinking about this era and it was top to bottom because like a Transformers movie has the same, like we operate in grays and pale blues.
Counterpoint
and
Avatar.
Well, Avatar exists in its own
bird.
World.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Should we do the whole Ash and Fire trailer in as its own experience?
It's ridiculous.
But it really feels like 2009 in a way that I didn't know that feeling like 2009 was a thing. Between the like weird melancholy of the era, the score,
I mean,
the look of it, and it's like, man, this feels like I felt at the end of college when I was sad and drifting.
So this is what, this is like emo.
Yeah.
Time span.
Yeah. And also, you know, hipster culture and, but I was a part of that culture to a certain extent. And so this did transport me to 2009 in a way. I mean, that was during the Great Recession, right? Mm. It was a sad time. So yeah, I think that he met the moment.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't dull. I mean, I was always, I will say, I watched this exactly wrong. I kind of watched this like in bits over the course of a day, like between moving the laundry and walking the dog and like catching 20 minutes of it here and there. It sounds like if I had surrendered to it, I might have had more of an experience.
It feels like it's absolutely like a Sunday afternoon. Let's sit down and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Bob and Terry are my favorite characters.
I can't even understand.
Which one are Bob and Terry?
Like the two owls.
Oh, yes.
Just that we build up to them so much and that they're just almost immobile owls that may or may not be able to communicate. We don't know. I wanted a little bit more of that. I added 4 points for the giant dog in the background and 1 point for the fact that there's still a normal sized cat. Like I loved those kind of things about the movie.
Also that we never really explored that giant dog anymore.
No.
He's just like, don't feed it. He'll never leave you alone.
Passing thought in your imagination, right? Like I feel like this movie captures the sort of dream logic of imagination in so many really beautiful ways.
I did have one question of how long was he gone? Was Max gone? And was he like knocked out somewhere and this is all in his head? Or is he just out playing and imagining this all in his head?
In my imagination, and this is partially influenced by my memory of the book, is that he's just in his room in time out.
Oh.
Because it's like in the book, it's like, and a jungle grew in his room.
That makes sense. I mean, but like... Yeah, so I guess it's just, you know, just thinking of it like, because he left. He ran out the house, and then when he comes back, mom hugs him and is like, basically, I missed you. And it's just,
but I mean, haven't you been that way after a timeout, right? Where it's like, we're making peace now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
I love how you had to think about it.
But no, I was trying to figure out if you're talking about like me when I was a kid or me as a mom.
Actually, I meant both. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was just wondering because he left the house, and I think that I would have left after my kid. Like, where the fuck are you going?
I thought him leaving the house was his imagination.
Gotcha.
But I'm not sure.
I'm finding comparable movies to settle on my score because this is one of those times when I really have to be like, no, it's better than this. It's worse than that. Mm-hmm. And I just like to comment that we have done so many movies that I have no memory of doing it.
We did a movie every week during COVID, right? Or during, yeah, you know, the quarantine. And like, yeah, that's a time that many of us have memory hold with good reason.
We did an episode on Enchanted.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
We did an episode on, I remember Papillon. Yeah. You talked me up a little bit. I was in the low 60s hearing the life in your voice has brought me up to a 67, I'd say.
63.
90.
Wow.
Don't be shy. Love what you love, right?
Okay, exactly. Yeah. 90.
Yeah.
I did love
this. Shouted from the rooftops.
73 and a third is the score. And I do have a Letterboxd list, but this is on so many versions of I'm dead inside, but I want to feel. There's 50 different lists with, yeah, a name like that. I settled, yeah, on distinctive films that fill the void when you're lonely or completely destroy you when you're happy.
Ouch.
Would you say?
Were any of us happy going into this?
It was okay.
I wasn't not happy. But, no, it wasn't a, hey, yeah.
It's an interesting, because the more I looked at the list, I'd Call Me By Your Name, The Spectacular Now, Eternal Sunshine, Lost in Translation. Like, it sounded like nonsense, and then I was like, yeah, kind of. Like these are all like emotional enemas. Like, you're getting things flushed out of you if you... we got a new bingo card. I don't think we have anything on it, but Camila, tell me more about it.
The twist spoiled in the trailer. I think we've already had a couple of those. And we've also each got our own square this time around, which means that we each have a secret envelope with something that the rest of us do or something like that. So last time we won, it was Rob, or last time I had a square, secret square for Robin. And if she said...
It was talking about the Oscars death,
yes,
race.
Yes, talking about the Oscars death race is what got that bingo card. So now there's one for each of us, because apparently Robin has something on me.
I do.
We also have a total running time over 2 hours, 15 minutes. Coke or Pepsi placement.
Like, ooh, that one.
Like, probably, you know, once we get some more 80s, though, that'll probably just be
back in the Cola Wars.
Right, mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. Bad romance chemistry and a narrator, some of the new ones that we have here.
Excellent.
Unless,
thank you.
Unless Carol and KW had bad romantic chemistry, which I don't think.
No.
I don't think that was the case.
No, I was still confused. Like, I thought they were brother and sister.
So I thought of that as a more sibling relationship, too. Yeah. And I thought of maybe the only more romantic pairing being Ira and
Judith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who were a cute couple.
Oh, I weirdly was obsessed with Forrest Whitaker's performance. Like, he's so...
Which one was he again?
Ira. Okay, right? Gotcha. He's so understated, mm-hmm, in everything he says. And all of the other voice actors are kind of hamming it up a little bit, and it really helps balance the tone.
Yeah.
I liked Paul Dano.
I never know which it is. I did too. He was the one voice I did not recognize on my own.
Alexander?
He's, yeah.
Which one was that?
The younger one. Or the one who acts young. Okay, yeah.
Gotcha. Do you feel like he hasn't achieved his final form yet? I always yeah, I'm always waiting for him to, you know, really do the thing, and he hasn't quite.
He really did the thing for me in The Fabelmans. That was one of the ones where, like, I said after he didn't get nominated there, I was like, I kind of want him to never get nominated and for that to be his thing. I bet he doesn't want that. Well, she was always nominated but lost, right? He keeps being on the bubble for a nomination and not getting it.
Okay.
But The Fabelmans, I think, was for me a real, like, God, this guy's good.
I liked him in Prisoners a lot.
I've never watched that because, yikes.
I forgot to look up what happened to this kid.
Nothing.
Yeah.
That was it. No, he was in a kind of a direct-to-streaming movie with Christopher Lloyd like 6 years later, and he seems to have stopped.
I thought he was great.
Yeah.
Also, Max Records. What a name.
Right?
Max Power.
Oh, hey, great name.
Yeah, isn't it? I got it off a hairdryer.
Maybe he's a DJ now.
Better be.
I cannot remember who said this, but I do remember seeing some director saying, like, you know, working with kids is hard. Pro tip, if the character and the actor have the same name, it's a lot easier.
I always think that when I see kid actors who have shared the name with their character, I'm like, is that just like a choice that we were just like, yeah, just go with
it? I mean, I love the idea of them being like, casting call, boys, 8 to 12, Max. Named Max.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I really enjoyed loving Naked Gun and then seeing the joy of Naked Gun cascade outward. Everyone I talked to who has seen it has just so delighted. Wow. Mainly because it's fun and silly and short. That seems to be the thing. Like, it's not... It's oddly, this movie made me hate Kevin Hart because I realized what has been missing from so much movie comedy for the past...
Silliness
10, 15, 20 years is a willingness to not look cool,
which he is not very good at.
No, I feel like a lot of mainstream comedy, you know, kind of I'm signaling him out, and there's plenty of times when I've laughed at him, but where is about like the cool guy in a weird situation where what we completely lost was pure silly wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was just saying that about Danny McBride the other day.
Oh yeah, he's funny.
But he always seems to put himself in the place of I'm the cool guy. I'm
less so on The Righteous Gemstones.
That's where this conversation started.
Oh, we
started
watching that.
But Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson, who goes so untamed in this one and just goes over the top with
the
everything.
The scatting scene.
Oh, it's so good. There's so many times when it's so funny. There's also times when it's not. There are bits that don't work because they're throwing so much at the wall, but I don't care because there's so much that did.
The reason I mentioned Buffy will come back is I fucking loved the Buffy joke. And Camila, at some point in your life, you need to watch Naked Gun. It's only 75 minutes long. Or just, I said this text to my sister too. I was like, or just seek out a clip of the Buffy joke. Like, it's like a minute and a half long, which is the longest joke in the whole movie because it's a very high jokes per minute.
Other than the montage, which is what I love.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
My favorite joke in Naked Gun, which I will not spoil.
Oh, yeah.
That's the rare time that I was like, I need to stop laughing so I can keep paying attention to this movie.
There were multiple times that I was laughing over jokes. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to watch this again.
Wow.
I want to posit a controversial Naked Gun theory, and then I promise we'll stop. I think we've found the right use for Seth MacFarlane. Seth MacFarlane produced this movie.
Oh.
He didn't write it. He didn't direct it. His voice isn't in it.
Oh.
But he produced this movie, and conspicuously, there's a joke every 30 seconds, and some of them hit and some of them don't, but they're coming so fast, and some of them are so like wacky winky that you just kind of keep laughing the whole time. I think we might be in his, it's like, let him, you know,
I will
shepherd projects.
Very reluctantly allow it. When I saw his name in the credits, I was like, oh, really?
He also, I mean, we think Liam Neeson is so funny. His previous, he hasn't done that much. The only big one before this is being the villain in Million Ways to Die in the West.
The Lego movie?
Yeah, that's a voice role. That's
okay,
kind of
but he was very funny in the Lego movie, and I don't think that he would necessarily be in this role without that. What I was going to say is that, so I was supposed to see a screening of this on Monday night, and I drove to the wrong theater.
Oh, no.
It happens to all of us.
Yes, critics' rite of passage is what I said. But I think that this was for the best, because I heard from other people who were there that it was, like, quiet. And... That's baffling to me because I saw it on a Friday afternoon in a surprisingly crowded theater and everybody was laughing at every single joke.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then secondly, I would not have yet known about the second greatest love story of our times, Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what's
watching
the first?
Them, Meryl Streep and Martin Short.
Okay. Sure.
watching them fall in love was maybe my favorite thing about the movie.
So this is true.
Yes.
Because I just keep seeing snippets of things.
I mean, if it's a publicity stunt, A plus.
Well,
work.
No, not like publicity stunt. I thought it was just like, I'm in love with her as an actor, as a, you know, peer, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't realize that, well.
They're in love, right, love.
Good for them.
They're in love.
They do a thing from the originals, the like, innuendo that's going wrong, but they just keep getting more intense about stuffing a turkey. Where it's like, do you like your turkey pink in the middle? Only if you're okay with an under-seasoned stuffing. And that keeps going. And I'm like, but they seem to have actual chemistry when they're saying these turkey sentences because they were falling in love.
And like they kiss so much and like you could tell that they're like, yeah, we get to kiss again. It's really cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, great movie. Really, and such a fizzy relief. You know what I mean? They don't make them like they used to, except for they did right now.
And I say the credits roll. There's a lot in the credits.
Yeah.
There's a beginning of credit sequence. There's a mid-credit sequence. There's an end of credit sequence. And the actual credits themselves are so packed with
jokes.
With jokes in the text. But the credits truly roll 73 minutes after the movie starts. And just
great.
What a gift. What a gift from them to us.
Great.
Last week I saw that and Together, I actually liked Naked Gun a little more than Together.
Which Together seems like a movie made in a laboratory for Sean Collier.
This is the one with Alison Brie and Dave Franco.
Yeah, I hate the pictures. The artwork. Ugh.
No, I saw the trailer and I just was like, okay, finger screen.
You know, I'm kind of bothered. I keep saying this. It's not a metaphor. It's a synonym. If you're saying this couple feels like they're stuck together and then they get stuck together, it's like,
yeah, that's not a metaphor.
Yeah, you didn't. You're just
showing me.
You're just visually representing. Like it felt like a thought that hadn't advanced all the way. That said, the guy's it's a first time writer director. He's got a knack for the, you know, suspenseful scenes and dramatic imagery and scary moments. I still liked it. I hope they never realize that this is an hour and a half of visual evidence that she's a much better actor than him. Because until you see them acting together, you might not know that intellectually.
He knows.
And he's just not nearly as good. Like,
And I do find him charming.
He's charming.
Yeah, in bits.
He's not very good.
No, he's...
He's not
He's got that thing where... He talks too much out of his face.
His pulled out. His brother's not that good, but his brother's much better.
Yeah.
It's... Anyway, she's great, and she carries the movie, and it works big between this and The Substance. Fleshy beasts are having a big moment right now. You know, for horror fans, yes, but this is one of those, it's like Long Legs last year, where it's like, if you thought this was going to be the best thing you've ever seen, no. If you just want a good, scary time, great, go have fun.
How gross is it on a scale of 1 to The Substance?
The Substance is grosser, but this is a little bit more... I would say The Substance is goopy gross, where this is more weird bone musculature gross. So
that might be harder for me, actually.
No, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, in some ways that is tougher. And anything else?
Fantastic Four.
Oh, Fantastic Four.
See? Okay, this is what I'm talking about.
It's not bad.
No, it's very mid.
Crank up the mids.
Yeah, I like all of them. I thought they were all good. I thought the movie was fine. I don't know. I have read reviews that are like, they're finally trying something new. I'm like, what the fuck they are? Thunderbolts was trying something new. Mm. Thunderbolts had like commentary about the human condition, at least in theory. This is definitely just, we need to set these guys up because there's Avengers movies coming out.
Maybe we stop telling this fucking story. Like, I have yet to see, like, these Fantastic... The Fantastic Four? It seems to be like the Fantastic Snore, quite frankly. because like, I have yet. Like, all of the movies have just been like, meh. Like, every time. I've never seen one that's just made me be like, yes, I'm fandom. You know, this is where I am. It's just, ugh.
I think maybe they don't translate to movies very well.
A huge part of it is that Mr. Fantastic's powers look awful on screen. And they actually reacted to that in this. He stretches like twice.
Right.
So like they just kind of were like, don't worry about it. But like The Incredibles is a good Fantastic Four movie. Mm. I kind of liked the first one with Chris Evans in it, like, but very much as this is a movie for children.
Yeah.
And like when I was growing up, my dad, whenever I got sick, would bring me a Fantastic Four comic book and an Archie comic book. And so that's like one of the only comic book properties that I have like a, you know, almost lifelong connection with. Mm-hmm. And because I read it as a kid, I've always been like, well, this one's for kids, which I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if true comic book nerds would agree with it, but this movie's not for kids. And that was one reason that I was maybe a little flat on it. I wanted it to have a little more whimsy.
Mm.
And I always like inch towards being a comic book person and then think better of it and stop. So I don't know the real answer to this question, but the little bit I'm aware of Marvel properties, isn't Galactus a bigger problem than he was in this movie? Isn't he like a giant god that can eat a planet?
I mean, I thought that's what he was depicted in as in this movie.
Yeah, but it ended up just like, we got to kick him in the hole.
Kick him in the hole and transport him to another part of the galaxy.
I felt like he had the Cloverfield the size of this monster keeps changing problem.
That might be reality. He might be more of a conceptual being. I don't know. I'm not enough of a nerd for this.
It felt like underutilizing one of the good big bads they had in their arsenal.
Well, I mean, when they did Rise of the Silver Surfer in the aughts, Galactus was like a cloud. And it was like, come on.
I liked her a lot, both performance and characterization of the
Shaula Ball.
Yeah.
Why not Norrin Radd, though?
What do those words mean?
Okay, like the original Silver Surfer is Norrin Radd, and he is the Herald of Galactus, and Shaula Ball is his tragically dead wife, but then it's like because of comic book nonsense. Camila just walked out of the room, by the way.
I feel like that was pointed.
I'm sure she's got something important to do, but also it's just always funny to me when she's like, you guys go talk for a bit. That should have been my secret square for Camila. What I was going to say is that like Norrin Radd is unassailably cool. I don't know as much about Shaula Ball. I think pretty clearly on record that I would generally prefer stories about women, but I was left with a big old why exactly with her.
It felt like it would look cooler.
Because of boobs?
Not because of boobs.
Okay.
Boobs add some dimensions to a silver thing.
One thing I was thinking about,
and hair. I liked her slicked back silver hair.
Oh yeah, her hair looked awesome. And I am glad that they had that one flashback sequence where you could see what's her face, Julia Garner.
Yeah,
I always want to say Jennifer Garner, and then I go wrong one. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we could see her actual face at some point. I kind of was wondering if they did it because in the previous film, and I believe this also happens in the comics, but I might be conflating it with Namor, Sue has like a connection with the Silver Surfer, but Sue was otherwise occupied in this film.
Yeah.
So they needed her to have a connection with another member of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they were like, oh, we don't want to have homoeroticism between Johnny Storm and Norrin Radd, which boo.
Yeah, we haven't moved on. When you first walked away, I was like, well, now I'm going to have to fill some time. Maybe I can, you know, talk about one of these old movies that I watched or throw it to Robin. I was like, no, we're not only we're still on the Fantastic Four, we're still on the same general point.
And then my final point is, why so gray? They do this in, like, everybody's talking about the retro-futurist design. Mm. That, to me, means give me some bright colors. And it just looks like it has a film over it of blandness. Superman did not have that problem. This movie did make me go, maybe I was a little too hard on Superman, a movie which I liked. But yeah, this movie was so underwhelming.
Yeah. Else did you see other than
those were the two things I wrote down in my notes, but one other thing I saw Death of a Unicorn because that hit HBO. Not for me.
I would have told you not to.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to watch 100 2025 movies, so when new ones appear on my streaming services, I always give them a chance.
You're trying to watch 100 movies released in 2025?
Yeah, last year I did 86, and like I realized how close I was in like late December, and I was like, I can't force myself to do this.
Were you trying to do it last
year?
No.
Okay. That, I went and checked, and I was like, oh, I got so close to 100. Wow. I've done it before. So, like, the trick is you gotta watch
everything.
Not everything, like hundreds everything. Of movies come out, but you watch a lot of stuff you wouldn't otherwise watch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to still not throw it to you, Camila. I forgot that the last time we recorded, I went from here to see I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me mad that this is getting dragged.
Mm.
Really?
Because, did you see it yet?
Mm-mm.
People are like, this is nowhere near as good as New Scream or New Halloween. Yeah, I Know What You Did Last Summer was nowhere near as good as Scream or Halloween. Like, it's kind of a second-ran series. And I feel like what they did with that is, like, we're just playing the hits. We got a guy, he's got a hook, we got some kids, they accidentally kill a guy. What are you waiting for? And for that, like, if your aim is to do a pure nostalgia trip, then I'm going to evaluate how well you did a pure nostalgia trip.
Right.
And I think they did pretty well. Yeah. And I liked, you know, hanging out with Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. And it was a fun, you know, whodunit kind of a time. There, it has a problem where, like, whoever wrote this tried way too hard to figure out Gen Z slang. And that is a little bit, fellow kids. Yeah, that is a little distracting. But if you saw the reviews and went, I'm not going to bother then. I had a good time. I had a good, remember when kind of a time. Maybe because it is the first horror movie I saw in the theater. I think we talked about that on the last show, did we?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So maybe it just hit the right notes for me. But
gosh, I wonder if Scream 2 was my first.
It was the same year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Camila.
I don't remember. Did I talk about Until Dawn last time?
I don't think so.
Because I saw that a little while ago.
Yeah, you saw it a while ago. Don't remember.
Yeah, that's about right.
Already gone.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I rated it 3 stars and gave it a heart. So, apparently, it was enjoyable at some point. Drop. I saw that.
I keep almost watching Drop, and then I go, I don't really need to, do I?
You don't need to, but if you find yourself in, like, I get, like, a couple hours to kill. It's a nice little popcorn movie with some action stuff. There's nothing too deep about it. I enjoyed the lead woman. I don't remember.
Megan something. And she has too many N's in her name.
Yeah, yeah. There was some questionable things about the character that I don't really want to get into right now, but just like the way she reacted to some things would have been more fun if we learned something, a secret about her as to why she was like this. But either way, it's still a good ish time for just like a little action.
Megan Fahey. Her last name is F-A-H-Y.
I would say Fahey, but Fahey, what do I know?
Probably. And her first name is spelled Meg Han with 2 N's on it.
Yeah, that's silly.
Do better with your name.
Why name your daughter Megan? Are you stocking up for a bitch shortage?
I recently rewatched Red Eye. Do you remember that Wes Craven movie with Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams?
I think they're remaking that.
I loved, I remember liking that movie. I saw it in the theater, but like rewatching it for the second, it was my only second time seeing it. I was like, this slaps. I love this.
Right.
And then I thought maybe I should watch Drop.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same vein. I rewatched it like a couple months ago too, because it keeps popping up on different streaming services like every month.
It's dancing between them.
Right. So yes, I agree. 28 years later.
I feel like we're talking about this every time.
Zombie Dawn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Glad you guys warned me.
Yeah.
So I watched the movie, and as credits rolled, it's over. And I'm like, they could have kept that. And then I realized, it's a trilogy. So there will be 2 more. So that makes sense now. So I enjoyed it now that there's 2 more that's going to, because it was almost like, why did y'all dig up Rafe and send him out, make him go somewhere for 15 minutes of screen time. But yeah, so it makes sense to add to it. Aaron, I mean, he's so pretty, but damn, he was unnecessary.
Oh, my nemesis, Aaron.
Your nemesis.
No, the kid did more than he did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's when you know that there are two more coming, it's a good movie. And I'm excited to see what Nia DaCosta does with it.
Yeah. I loved the gimmicky stuff. I loved the, like, spinning camera when a zombie gets dead.
Oh, yeah.
And, that was a lot for some people, but I was like, no, I want to make it cool looking. A movie cool looking for once.
Yeah, because it was kind of some of the stuff, that same stuff that he did in the first one, too. Mm-hmm. Just a little more, he had more budget this time, I assume. And I saw Karate Kid Legends.
Oh, no. I wanted this to be good for you.
Here's the thing. It's not. There was no heart. This was a very hollow story.
Oh, wow.
Like, and for you to call it Legends, it was unnecessary. Like, this was just like real flat. There was like, there's no real motive for why the dude wants to kick his ass so badly. We've got like, even though I love the fact that Pacey is here, like, it's also, why are you here? And there was this.
His house burned down. He needs money.
They have like the, it's like you pick one, because we start off, we have the kid training Pacey. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we could have just left. We should have done that through the whole movie. That should have been the string there. And then, yes, still bring in Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio. That's fine. And also, my big concern was about, like, how are we doing this in the different universe? It's the same universe with the Cobra Kai and blah, blah, blah. It's the same universe. It's just we don't get into the specifics of what Ralph is up to when we meet him again.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's just like, hey, I need your help. Here, I'm here. Okay, fine. You know what? Right. And I did note, I clocked he had a wedding ring on. So it was like, okay.
Thank you. All right.
So we're safe. And then there's a cute post-credit scene that's totally worth that made it for me. that bumped it up a half star for me before I walked out. So it should not have been called Legends.
Yeah.
Look, Pat Morita, long gone.
Yeah.
So you got Jackie Chan, who was in one movie that we don't really talk about.
Exactly.
And Ralph Macchio.
A movie that I loved, by the way. I mean, like, I don't think it's good, but I was like, yay, the whole time. No Hilary Swank?
No.
No.
Talk about missing a legend.
Well, and I still haven't watched the last season of Cobra Kai, and I don't know if she shows up in that, but they did the Legends. They did it. Everybody came back that was alive and well to come back, and they did it perfectly. So we just didn't need this movie. I enjoy Jackie Chan. They should have just brought Jackie Chan in for another season of Cobra Kai. Like, it's just too much.
My favorite thing about it was that this was where I was like, I think I'll watch Karate Kid Part 2 before I watch this one, because I've never seen that one. Mm. And literally, Legends ends with about 2.5 minutes of Karate Kid Part 2.
Great.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to go, we swear there's a reason why Jackie Chan is here.
We promise.
Remember when he was like, actually, my dad was from China? Huh? See? It's a thing.
It connects. We swear.
We were setting it up all along.
Jackie Chan is Chinese.
His character.
In The Karate Kid Part 2, Mr. Miyagi is like, actually, Miyagi Kung Fu comes from when he went to China.
Got it.
And
cool.
Met, and that's the link between.
One tree, two branches.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Say that more times than they need to.
One tree, two branches. And then he gives him his supposedly his bandana, his headband. That's not the same one. It's like, Ralph, you just got some extra ones just kind of hanging around. Like, you're being insincere now. Like, I feel like you're playing in this kid's face.
This house has two things, bonsai trees and bandanas. There's a lot of both of those. Nothing, not a lot else, but it's got a lot of both of those. Shall we draw a film?
Yes, please.
It's going to be spooky season before you know it, but we're not there yet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Right now, we're back in the numbers.
Uh-oh.
We're back in the numbers where 10,000 BC was, but not that. It's a different number. It's the number 2, as in too fast, too furious.
Okay. One of the bad ones, unfortunately.
Too fast, too furious.
I don't think I've seen it. I know I've seen the first one, and I know I saw them when they started getting into what they are now.
Yeah.
So I probably picked back up at 4 or 5 or.
But I want to say John Singleton directed it, which sounds
insane.
But man, I was trying to find a word plausible. Other than insane. But yes.
Did he? Yeah, you're right.
Wild. The late great.
Wow.
I'm certainly not using my precious veto on Too Fast, Too Furious because it's what you putting on? They're both fast and furious, and you're like, yep, movie's happening. Well, you know,
we did an episode on the first one, right?
Yeah, we're very slowly working our way. I feel
like we do another one too. I feel like this will be the third Fast and Furious.
I thought we did a 5 or a 6,
or was it Hobbs and Shaw?
No, we definitely didn't do Hobbs and Shaw.
We
did the Fast and the Furious, which is 6.
No, the Fast and the Furious is the first one.
Oh, right. Fast and Furious is a different.
Yes.
We did the Fate of the Furious.
That's
not. No, we did not.
Yes, we did. Episode 133, Fate of the Furious, Camila 69, Robin 68, Sean 73.
I give a movie with Charlize Theron only 68 points.
You gave it less than me, yeah.
And we also did the Fast and Furious, so we've done 2. So this is the...
Baffling.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to those episodes.
I was saying earlier.
I know, right?
It was right after we did Mrs. Doubtfire. I remember doing Mrs. Doubtfire.
I do too.
How about that?
Cool.
Okay, anyway, Too Fast, Too Furious. What? Where did Paul Walker just come up? What were we just talking about him for? Mm-hmm. He was in line for something that we were just talking about.
50 Shades
of Grey.
Oh.
Yeah, they were interested in him before.
And then he died?
And then he died. Yeah.
He really dodged that one.
Thank you. I don't think he could have done it also.
Yeah. No. He's...
That's so dark.
Part of Too Fast, Too Furious is what my brother said when I texted him that Paul Walker died. Which, it's right there. No, it's a tragedy. We're all very sad because he was a great actor. He was a very good actor. He couldn't have done 50 Shades because with Christian Grey, we have to at least believe that something's going on behind the eyes.
Yeah, he's just always there.
Right.
His window is wide open all the time.
There's no depths of depravity with Paul Walker. You know that scene in Pleasantville when they go parking, but he doesn't know what sex is? How did this become a referendum on Paul Walker? I don't know. We'll get more to that next time. It was October 16th of 2009, Where the Wild Things Are. What was the number one song in America?
I don't know the artist, but I want to say the song Down.
You're correct.
Woo!
Wow. How'd you do that?
Because I always think about Lil Wayne's line in his verse, I'm down like the economy. So what was going on in 2009, right?
Yeah. It is featuring Lil Wayne. Anybody know who the artist on that song is?
I can't even think of what the song is.
Is it something with a J?
The first name is literally J.
Sean?
Yes.
Jay Sean.
Just looked at me and said my name, and you got there.